few weeks ago, we started what I threatened to be a series. And I think I said maybe a mini-series, depending on how many lessons you think it takes to really make a series. We're going to talk about the Christ of the church. And so tonight is intended to be the second installment of that idea. And, you know, we took it from the idea of our responsibility that we have to imitate Christ, something that Paul alludes to there in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1. And I ask us to think about how we think about this verse a lot of times and how we think about our efforts to do that, to imitate Christ. And then I wanted us to consider this idea that I think we make every effort to imitate the first century church. And again, as I said that day, that's right, that's good, and we should. In fact, being gathered here today demonstrates that that is the case, that we go and look for things that we have example of or things that we can find commands for, that we gather on a day and do the things that we can read about. In fact, as Paul summarizes that, he tells Timothy we follow the pattern of sound words. And in doing that, he also, if you catch it there, tells Timothy doing that is following in the faith and love that are in Christ Jesus. So we ought to do that. But I challenge us with this question, but do we try as hard to imitate the first century Christ? And this question, I think, serves to do maybe be another reminder for us to just make sure that we don't forget that being a disciple is primarily an individual effort and that we need to think about that. In other words, you might say it this way. We can't become so singularly focused on being like them. And by them, I mean those first century Christians. In other words, how this might manifest itself is just being so focused only on our collective activities that we neglect to become like him. That we neglect our own personal transformation. So then how do we do that? How do we go about imitating the Christ of the church? In our first discussion of this, the first way we talked about was reminding ourselves that Christ, the Christ of the church, was moved by compassion. In that lesson, we recall the fact that Christ demonstrated compassion for others. Demonstrated. In other words, Christ just didn't feel compassion. He let what he felt compel him to take action for the benefit of others. And we reviewed how Christ taught compassion to others. How the takeaway from the lesson of the Good Samaritan was, you go and do likewise. And we touched on the principle that while we are promised and can expect compassion from God, that is conditional. We can expect compassion if we show compassion. And then we concluded by reminding ourselves of this fact. If we're going to imitate Christ, Christ's greatest compassion is for the lost. And we challenged ourselves by asking that question. What or who prompts our greatest compassion? Is it perhaps sometimes we think more of those who are suffering temporary hardships, no matter how difficult they may be, but things in this life, do we have more compassion for those suffering those temporal hardships or those who are eternally lost? And the conclusion then was if we're going to be like the Christ of the church, then we will be people moved by compassion. And as we continue the idea tonight of how we can imitate Jesus, I think we need to notice that the Christ of the church was sent to serve. In fact, Jesus made that very clear. He made it as a comment about himself. He said he came to serve. Look over to Matthew chapter 20, if you would, a passage there where Jesus makes that comment. The context of this, you may remember, is where the mother of James and John has come to Jesus, and she has a special request for him. She wants to make her two sons be greatest in his coming kingdom. Well, then you remember the other 10 hear that. They're not that happy about that idea. So they start having kind of an argument among themselves about who is going to be the greatest in the kingdom. And Jesus calls them together and he answers it this way. Matthew 20 verse 25 beginning. But Jesus called them to him and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them and their great ones exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant. And whoever would be first among you must be your slave, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." So what Jesus did here was he turned the idea of the organizational chart for worldly Gentile kingdoms on its head. He inverted the pyramid, if you would. If you think about, if you know what an organizational chart looks like, typically it's very much shaped like a pyramid. And we all know which way the service flows in most organizational charts at work or in our government or any group of people on this world. We know how that works. And Jesus comes and says, it's not going to be that way in my kingdom, and turns that thing upside down. Jesus says the principle in his kingdom is this, that the great will not lord their authority over the small. In fact, that's so prevalent and important in his kingdom that you may think of that allusion in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 3. Even one of the things that elders are reminded of there is they're not to lord their authority over the flock. They're not to lead through domineering or bullying. That's not going to be in the kingdom of Christ. Instead, in his kingdom, and again, in exact contrast, the way things work in this world is the path to greatness. There is service. And that's the principle that Jesus is teaching these men here. And again, think about what a 100% contrast, what a 180 degree out of phase idea that is to the world, that is to the government, that is to maybe work and those kind of things. You know, in this world, people tell you if you're going to get ahead, you better stand up. And Jesus is saying in my kingdom, if you want to get ahead, you need to bow down and serve. And that's his point to those men there. And the lesson then for us, as we think about the idea of imitating Christ, is that if we won't serve, if we don't serve, we're not imitating our King. Now we may claim we are, and we may think we are, but if we're not servants, we're not imitating our King. We're not doing what He did. In fact, in Luke 22, another account of a, believe it or not, argument among the apostles over who is going to be greatest in the kingdom. Again, Jesus called their attention to him, and again, he called their attention to the contrast between those in authority in the world and him. And he said, but I am among you as one who serves. And if we're going to imitate Christ, that will be our attitude. And the passage that Jeff read for us as we began, John chapter 13, the lesson that comes out of that, Jesus reminded his followers, there's a servant is not greater than his master. And that's a lesson that we need to learn. There in John chapter 13, what happens when we read that episode, we understand what Jesus is doing here. Jesus teaches an eternal principle by using a contemporary practice, that of washing his apostles' feet. And I think the context makes that clear. There in John chapter 13, what Jesus does is wash their feet. But in verse 7 of that, he says, but you do not understand now. When Peter gives him a little pushback. Well, Jesus clearly, I think, alludes to the fact, I'm going to make a bigger point here, because Peter understood washing feet. I mean, Peter understood feet, dirt and water and the interaction thereof. So I think when Jesus says, no, you don't understand yet, he's laying the seed for that. And we're talking about something bigger than the literal here. I think that may be even clearer in verse 12 of chapter 13 when Jesus says, do you understand what I've done to you? Again, if the answer was you washed our feet, then yeah, let's go have popcorn. It had been very straightforward and literal. Wouldn't have even had to ask that question if that's all he was getting at. But that's not what Jesus was talking about. He was thinking beyond that idea. And I think here, one of those rare moments when the apostles were silent when he asked that question, because I think it's very magnanimous of us just to say occasionally they missed the point a few times, right, when Jesus was conversing with them. And here they had enough understanding he's going to teach us something. They didn't offer the obvious answer, I think, to that question. But there in John 13, I think it's down in verse 15 where Jesus actually starts accomplishing what this was meant to accomplish. And he says, for I've given you an example that you also should do just as I have done for you. So Jesus here makes the point that not only did he come to serve, he came to serve as our example. So then the real lesson for us is in verse 16 of John chapter 13. There Jesus says, truly, truly I say to you, in other words, though King James, verily, verily, in other words, pay attention. This is the lesson here. A servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. And the impact of Jesus saying that is simply this, that as Lord, Jesus was worthy to be served. But that's not what he did. But instead, he served. And if the true lesson is in verse 16, then notice that the true blessing is in verse 17. Jesus says, if you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. And the point here, Jesus said, the blessing is not just in the knowing. The blessing is in the doing. So the blessing is not in taking, when you leave here, to not just knowing, hey, I'm supposed to be a servant. The blessing becomes when we get to serving, when we get busy serving others. And it really is something that ought to come natural to kingdom citizens. In fact, if you start thinking about the history of the church in the New Testament, we just can't help but notice that this seems to be a principle that emerges, that that's what faithful servants do. Faithful servants serve. In fact, you go back to very early in the book of Acts, here in Acts chapter 6, when the church is just beginning, and those crowds that were there the day of Pentecost are still in Jerusalem, and they have this first little conflict maybe in Acts 6, where you'll recall that daily there's a distribution of food to some of the widows there, and that there was a problem with one set thing and their folks were being neglected. And the apostle says, well, we're not going to leave what we're doing to take care of this, but let's appoint men to take care of this. Let's put some men you can trust over this service. And you recall the people, one of the things we read there about the men that was selected is they chose Stephen, and he's described as a man full of faith. I just think it's interesting that early in the church, in this episode, what you see is that relationship between faith and service. That those two are just, again, so well established and so continued throughout the idea that it's hard to split the two. I think that idea is repeated and, in fact, I would say personified in deacons, as you think about what the Bible has to say about deacons. And here I'm talking about deacons with a capital D, that office, as it's described in the New Testament, that group of men that are given that title and placed in that position to provide that service to a local church. If you think about the qualifications for deacon, in 1 Timothy chapter 3, you see again those two ideas both present there. Talking about their qualifications, they must hold the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience, then let them serve as deacons. These men must be full of faith, and people that are full of faith will serve, then let them serve. Why? Because faithful servants serve. And certainly I think we're blessed here at Eastside with a group of capital D deacons that do this. A group of men that are full of faith and willing to serve, and we benefit from their work, and we ought to thank them for that. We ought to show them our appreciation. I remember there was a time when it was more prevalent, haven't seen it in several years, but I used to see a bumper sticker that said, if you can read this, thank a teacher. I remember seeing that. That makes sense to me. I would think this about when we gather like this right now. And I would say this, if you can hear my voice, thank a deacon. Because if you think about all the work that goes into allowing us to assemble here, down to literally me being able to see my notes, you seeing the slides, it being on live stream, everything kind of comes together here, and some of the work those men do to allow us to do what we do here collectively. Now, they're not the only ones that play a part, but they play an important part in what we do here. But I got to tell you, this next bullet's just for me, because I really got a kick out of this. As I was studying the word deacon and servant this week, I discovered something I didn't know until this week. There's the Greek word that we obviously translate or transliterate into deacon. And I really think it's hilarious that the root of that word, it literally means kicking up dust. I found that to be, and if, you know some of the guys that are deacons here. I mean, dust kicker's about as good as you could describe a few of us, right? Dirt kicker? I've probably been called that, I think, because I really think that's kind of funny. But the idea is that somebody's so busy, they're kicking up dust because they're always on the move. So the next thing I thought about was the roadrunner, right? You get the beep, beep, zip, bang, and then that little cloud of dust. Just the idea of being so busy serving and serving others, moving around and leaving that little bit of dust. And I think that's kind of neat. That's where that word comes from. But I noticed something else about that word as well as I was looking this week. The word there that we translate deacon, you know, that word, if my count is right, appears 37 times in the New Testament. And sometimes it's translated deacon, like we're talking about deacons, but sometimes, and most of the time, that word is translated as either serve or serving or even ministering or helping. And if you were in the Ephesians class this morning, we pointed out the fact that that word appeared there in Acts 19 about helpers or ministers of Paul. But in order to kind of reinforce that point, I did a little math, because, you know, you can't argue with math, right? So I looked as if that word appears 37 times in the New Testament, and only 5 of those are talking about men who are officially serving as deacons. What that tells us is really in any given congregation like this, only about 13.5% of the serving ought to be done by the deacons. Right? And thankfully, I think that's the way it is here at Eastside. In other words, you might spin it this way. There needs to be a little deacon in all of us. And I mean with a small d. And what we mean there is a servant. All of us need to have the heart of a servant. Again, we saw that this morning. There was in Timothy. There was in Erastus in Acts chapter 19 that we saw that. But other instances in the New Testament that make this plain as well. There was in Martha. In fact, in John chapter 12 and verse 2, it says right there, Martha served. And that's the same word. And, you know, I think about Martha a lot, and I kind of feel bad for Martha a little bit. I think she gets kind of a bad rep. Because Martha was busy serving, and maybe Martha was always busy serving. And there's one time that it seems like she gets rebuked a little bit, and it's better what Mary was doing. But let me just be perfectly frank with you. We need Marthas in this world. The world just would not turn around if everybody wanted to be a Mary. So if you're serving and you feel like you're a Martha, keep Martha in. Keep serving. That's important. Martha had a little deacon in her. Phoebe had a little deacon in her. Phoebe was a servant. In fact, in Romans chapter 16, when Paul commends her to the church in Rome, he says, Phoebe, who is a servant of the church here. She's going to Rome, and he tells us how she served. She wasn't a deacon with a capital D, but she was a servant of the church there. And he says, because she has been the patron of many. And you get the idea that this was a woman of some means. Perhaps she was wealthy. So she was in a position where she would financially or through the use of things she owned, maybe her home was hospitable. She sponsored people, maybe even provided money to support preachers. Paul says she's been a patron of many, including myself. And she had the means. She was leaving there around Corinth and going to Rome. And Paul uses that same word there. And I think, if you look around the room now, we realize we're blessed at Eastside with a lot of Timothys and a lot of Marthas and a lot of Phoebes. I didn't figure anybody wanted to be an Erastus, but if you do, you can be an Erastus too. But we have a lot of servants here. And if you're one of them, thank you. Just excel still more. If you haven't picked up that mantle yet, then decide to become one of them. Have you got a little deacon in you? You need to develop it. Be a servant. Because, again, as you look around this room and you think about all the people here that serve, they're proof that you get this idea. True servants don't need a title. True servants simply need opportunities to serve. And you do that. And you do that knowing that serving is not glamorous. And you know, serving really never has been glamorous. I think particularly if you go back and think about our example. You remember we read Matthew 20 and 28. We focused on the first half of that verse. It says, Jesus said, the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. But you know what his service ultimately took the form of? He came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. That was Jesus' greatest service. His greatest act of service was a humiliating death on a cross. So serving isn't always or necessarily glamorous. What it is being interested in caring for the needs of others and taking care of those needs in an active and in a practical way. So you think, well, what might that look like? So here's the practical part of the lesson tonight. You know, being a servant and serving others might be a call, a text, or a card, or a conversation. And I'm looking forward to the day where we get more conversations back in the equation. But being a servant might be to show an interest in somebody else, reaching out to them, encouraging them, serving them in that way, finding out what they need. You know, part of that conversation, no matter what form it takes, might just be the question, how can I serve you? What do you need? What can I do for you? You know, what it might look like is giving someone a ride or providing a meal or pulling a weed. Again, service can take on so many different forms. I thought about the number of times in the time that my family has been at Eastside that as I walked in, I saw someone getting out of a car that wasn't theirs and realized that I didn't know anything about it. So I walked up on it and saw that there was someone here who was taking time to go pick someone else up and bring them to services. Or maybe pick someone up and take them to a doctor's appointment. That stuff happens so much more than we know. Providing, I have firsthand intel on how good you guys are about this providing a meal business, and I appreciate being part of a group that takes eating very seriously. But now that Marlene is involved in what we call the meal train here, I'll just tell you this about the meal train. You better get out of the way of it. I mean, that thing's coming, right? It's so fun. When she will put together a need and put it out there, and then our inbox starts just blowing up, as the kids say. I mean, just ding, 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 ding. And people just jump. You have to hurry. If you want to be on that, if you want to take advantage of that opportunity to serve somebody, you better be fast. You know what's particularly impressive to that for me is that as occasionally I'm checking email, I'll look and see somebody that responded. You know, it crosses all cross sections of this group. You look, you see people that maybe are retired, you think, well, that's so nice of them. They're in a place in life where they feel like they have time to do that, and they're doing that. But you see people that you know are busy. You see young mothers with small kids at home. You see people that work all day. You know they're busy, but take advantage of it. You see Bob Buchanan. I mean, you see just a cross-section of people that will take their time to serve somebody else. And that's powerful. And that's another way people can serve. Look, if you're like me, the reason that doesn't say cooking a meal is because I wanted it to apply to me as well. You don't want me to cook you anything. But you know what I might do is buy you lunch sometime. What somebody here without cooking skills might do is meet with somebody to do some of that stuff in the first line, like have a conversation over a cup of coffee or something and pay for that and serve somebody in that way. Not just in the thing I'm providing them, but now I'm talking to them, encouraging them, and kind of merge those two bullets together. Or in a group this size, again, there are those who need help in various ways. It's about to warm up. Maybe there'll be some folks here who need help keeping a yard mowed, a flower bed tended, and that sort of thing. There's opportunities out there. Oh, I'm going to get self-serving here for just a second. That's service, right? There comes a younger men, listen to me. There comes a time in older guys' life, so at least my age and up, where we feel like, you know, I've done enough moving and helping other people move. You know, I mean, I'm still going to show up on okay, but believe me, there's a day coming when Brother Houston would love to bronze his hand truck and hang it above the mantle, you know. So, hey, here in a college town, young bucks with good backs, lots of opportunities to serve that way. And I got an amen down here. So be looking for opportunities and things like that we can do. And here's the thing about it. Again, service comes in so many ways. And the particular opportunity you have to serve, you know what? It might be expensive. You might find yourself in a place, you know, somebody needs a car repair. You might find yourself in a place where somebody's behind in rent and you know you can help them. You might find yourself helping someone fund an adoption. And spending quite a bit of money. But maybe if money's not your strong suit or you don't have a lot of that, you got time. Because see, serving ought to be and will be sacrificial. And it's not glamorous. May well be that no matter what you do, only you and the one you served ever know about it, you think. But God knows. And you know what it is every time? Is a demonstration of love. I love Galatians 5:13. It may be in my estimation, and this is a very non-scholarly term, just it's a Bob observation. Galatians 5:13 may be the quickest 180-degree turn in the New Testament. Because Paul starts that verse talking about the freedom we have in Christ, and he so anticipates human beings, the human conditions, because the first thing humans think about when I got a little freedom is me, right? That's so natural. So Paul there, Galatians 5:13 says, talks about Christ died to give us freedom that we have, but he died. Use it to serve self. Don't use your freedom as an opportunity to serve the flesh, but instead through love, serve one another. So when we serve one another, it's through love. It's a demonstration of love. And I want you to think about this. When we serve His, we're serving Him. You don't have to turn back to Matthew 25. You can if you want to. I'll read it to you. But again, you're familiar with that passage. You know, Jesus is giving a judgment scene. It talks about the king coming out and judging, imparting the people to the left and to the right. It's the sheep and the goats thing. And you know that when he sends those to his right hand, the righteous, and tells them, enter ye blessed of the Father to the joys prepared for you. And they kind of respond to him as if they don't understand exactly how it worked out that way for them. And beginning there in verse 37, it says, then the righteous will answer him saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you? Or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. So serving isn't glamorous. But when we serve one another, we're serving Him. And when we serve one another, we're imitating Him. And that's what we're talking about. Talking about being imitators of Christ. We're going to talk about that a little more, but again, I hope it challenges us. And I hope we will seriously think about this idea. I think particularly maybe between the idea of thinking too much or exclusively is what I would say about what we do collectively versus what I need to be doing individually. Again, it is not enough to imitate the churches of Christ that we can read about in the New Testament. And again, we must do that. But we must not just do that. We must imitate the Christ of the church. He was moved by compassion. And he was sent to serve. What about you tonight? As we think about Christ and Him being sent to serve, you'll recall we looked a couple times at Matthew chapter 20 and verse 28. And again, Jesus Himself said, the Son of Man came not to serve, to be served, but to serve. And He said, and to give His life as a ransom for many. Do you believe that? That Jesus came in an ultimate act of service was giving His life to pay the price for your sins to bring you back or buy you back to God. If you believe that, have you acted on that faith? Have you confessed before others, yes, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? Moved by that faith and that confession, have you committed to turning away from the sin in your life and turning toward God in a life of service? And if you will do that, have you been buried in baptism, putting that old man of sin to death and burying him, but coming up out of that water to walk in newness of life as a child of His? Have you done that? Have you become a Christian? If you've done that, then you are a Christian. If there's anything in your life that you know you've not been doing, that you should have been doing, or that you've been doing that you should not have, there's something in a public way that you know is an obstacle between you and God, or something we can help you with, we'll pray with you and for you. If we can do anything to help you now, let us know by coming forward while we stand and while we sing.